And welcome to a new series. We're doing a short 4-week series. Apologize, a bit of confusion. I was not clear with the topic, but it is a new topic. And the topic we're going to be dealing with in the next 4 weeks is, until the end of the term, is giving and receiving. It's an important topic because the truth is that both the concept of giving and the concept of receiving are both very misunderstood sometimes. So for today, we're going to just go through a general introduction and some general comments and then develop it over the next few weeks, please God. Okay, so just as a beginning, generally speaking, I suppose normally when we think about giving and receiving, so when we think about someone who's a giving person, a giver, we see that as a virtue, as something great. Someone who's a giver is a good person. Adam Grant, who's the author of a book called Give and Take, the co-author of a new book by Sheryl Sanders, which we're going to mention towards the end, he wrote a book called Give and Take, which is written to explain why helping others drives our success. So in one of his TED Talks, he does this test. Just have a look at it quickly. Okay, so for the sake of those people who can't see over the recording, step one, he says, take a moment to think about yourself. And step two, if you made it to step two, you're not a narcissist. Now, let's just talk about giving for a few moments, because from a Jewish perspective, obviously that's true. Giving on any level, or whatever we give, is a tremendous thing. It's one of the greatest ideals, one of the greatest values in Jewish literature. In fact, we are taught that the world, when the world was created, there's a verse in Psalms that says, Olam chesed yibaneh, which means the world was created and based on kindness. It was founded on the concept of kindness. In other words, the whole idea that God created the world is because God wanted to give. So the entire creation is based on the concept of giving. In fact, just to take it a step further, we know that the 6 days of creation, or we talk about the 7 days of the week, correspond to the 7 emotions. We've talked about this before. The first 6 days are the six, what we call 6 masculine emotions, chesed to yesod. And chesed was the first one. Chesed, which means kindness, which means giving, is the first foundational one. But not only that, the Zohar tells us that the first being chesed actually goes with everything else. In other words, everything else that God did throughout the week, everything that God created, everything that He communicated and transmitted to the world, even those things that openly don't seem to be like chesed. For example, you know that Sunday corresponds to chesed and Monday corresponds to gevura and so on. But everything was founded on chesed. In other words, chesed is the foundation of everything. So even when God holds back, it's for the purpose of giving. It's because if you didn't hold back, if you didn't have gevura, for example, it wouldn't be something that we could receive. It wouldn't be something we could handle. So therefore, every part of the creation, we are taught, has in it, embedded in it, the concept of chesed. That's how important this idea of giving is and how foundational and how integral it is to the whole concept of creation and the divine design of creation. Now we know, for example, one aspect of giving is the concept of charity, the concept of tzedakah, as we call it in Hebrew, which we know if we look in the Talmud, we look in the Midrash, we see so many things associated with the concept of giving. So we find that giving is the foundation, called a foundation mitzvah. All other mitzvot are, so to speak, compared or equal, or tzedakah is equal in weight, so to speak, to all the other mitzvot, all the other commandments. We find that tzedakah protects people. There's a famous story the Talmud tells us about Rabbi Akiva's daughter, famous Rabbi Akiva's daughter, who, when she was born, the astrologers, the stargazers, told Rabbi Akiva that she would be bitten by a poisonous snake on the day of her wedding. Whether he worried about it, didn't worry about it, the story goes the following, that on the day that she got married, the wedding went ahead, and everything was fine, and the wedding was celebrated properly. And what had happened was, she had had a piece of jewelry that had a pin, which for storage purposes, she had put it into a hole in the wall. And when after the wedding she took it out of the hole in the wall, there was a snake there, and that pin had killed the snake. And when Rabbi Akiva heard about the story, he asked her, "What did you do today? What happened today?" Because he remembered what the astrologers had told him, that she was destined to suffer this tragedy on the day of a wedding. So eventually it came out the following, that, you know, in those days catering wasn't like it is today. There's no freezer space, there was no forward catering. So things were done homemade in the kitchen on that day, and they were done specifically portions. There was no storage facility, so they were done portions according to the people that were going to be attending the simcha. So it came out that as the wedding was being prepared, someone, a beggar, had knocked on the door who was hungry, and Rabbi Akiva's daughter had given away her own portion for her own wedding. So Rabbi Akiva said that now he understands what happened. The natural order of the destiny of the way things were supposed to happen, the stargazers were right. There was a threat of a snake on the day of a wedding, but the aspect of giving had protected her. Right? We also told that tzedakah, giving, hastens the redemption. So there's so many things and so many blessings that are connected to the concept of giving and this foundational mitzvah of tzedakah, of giving, of chesed, and so on.
When you say tzedakah overrides, what other...
Not override, I say tzedakah is equal to in weight. In other words, it has the same sort of gravitas, the same sort of value kind of thing compared to all other mitzvot. It's an amazing idea. There's an amazing thought that I saw recently in one of the commentaries. It talks about Abraham Avinu's meal. You know this famous story when the three angels came to him. So it says that it was an interesting menu. It says that he ran to Sarah, "We've got to prepare a meal, we have three guests." And the menu was an interesting menu. On one hand, it says in the pasuk, in the verse, that Avraham Avinu ran to the field to get calves. I think I mentioned this before, he wanted to give them a good meat meal of high quality, and apparently what was considered then high quality was tongue meat. And he gave them tongue and mustard. But the strange thing is, I mean, that would have been a great meal. If you look at the verse, it says that first he gave them milk and cheese. Now, it could be because he wanted to give them some cocktails. It took him time until he prepared the meat and so on. Maybe he wanted to give them something light before. And there's a discussion about the kashrut of that, the milk and then the meat, which is not a problem, because actually he first gave them milk and then meat, and if you eat milk, it's okay to eat meat afterwards, not vice versa, and so on. Okay, so that's all fine. The question is, why was milk part of the menu? And even if it was part of the menu for whatever reason, we know the Torah doesn't just tell us stories. There's no just ordinary details. If the Torah finds it important for us to know that milk and cheese was part of the menu, must be a reason. And one of the mystical sort of commentaries on the Torah says a very interesting insight. He says the following. He said, milk is a food of giving. It's what a mother nourishes her child when a child is born. Not only is food and milk a food of giving, but not only is milk a food of giving, but actually milk, the giving of milk that the mother provides for her young infant, expresses the depth of what giving is all about. Because one could make a mistake when engaging in the concept of giving and sort of getting involved in the idea of trying to give away that belongs to us and so on. Sometimes it's hard to give. Why is it hard to give? Because we have this perception that what we give away is given away. In other words, we're now lacking something. We're missing something. The only exception to that is when a mother nurses her child. It's an interesting idea. And we know when a mother nurses her child, the act of giving replenishes the supply in a very strong way. And in fact, it continues to replenish the supply as long as there's giving. When the giving stops, the supply stops. Right? So when Abraham was visited by the three angels, and the three angels were there partly to tell him that Yitzchak, Isaac, would be born. In other words, that meeting of the three angels and Abraham was a foundational meeting. It was about the destiny and the identity of the Jewish nation. It was a meeting, it was a meal that laid the foundations of the future Jewish destiny. Abraham began the meal with the message of giving. As we know, Abraham himself, we'll come to this later, but a bit more as well, but Abraham himself personified the concept of chesed. Hospitality was Abraham's thing. And therefore, he wanted to begin that meeting, he wanted to begin that meal with something that represents the concept and the message of giving, that when you give, you receive. That there's nothing more beneficial for a person than to give, because giving, besides the fact that giving adds meaning to life and gives purpose to life and so on and so forth, but giving also, at the end of the day, you gain from giving. Apparently Winston Churchill said it like this. He said, "We make a living by what we get, but we make a life by what we give." It's a nice sentence. There's a story of Moses Montefiore, who of course was a tremendous, outstanding figure in the 19th century and known for his philanthropy. Someone once asked him, he said, "So Moses, what are you worth?" So he thought for a moment and he gave a figure. So the guy said, "No, come on. Be honest, like, you're worth a lot more than that." So he answered and he says like this, he smiled and he says, "You didn't ask me how much I own, you asked me how much I'm worth. So I calculated how much I gave away this year. That's what I'm worth. What I own is something different. What I gave away, that's what I'm worth." So giving, this concept of giving, this concept of chesed, we know that the whole concept of giving, of course, is so integral to our human development because it makes us less self-centered. It allows us to go beyond ourselves. It allows us to grow. The whole concept of human growth, the whole concept of going beyond who we are, beyond being trapped in our own little prison, is facilitated in a large way through the concept of giving. In fact, human beings are designed in a very interesting way, different to all animals. Human beings are designed to be born helpless. Did you know that? Not so with other animals. I mean, you must know that if you had children. But other animals are different. Other animals are much more self-sufficient when they... If any of you would have seen my Facebook post in the middle of the night, you know what I'm about to say. I did go back to sleep, by the way. So children are born helpless. Why? Human beings, that is. Completely helpless. Why? God designed it that way to give parents a huge dose of giving so that we should give. And what's interesting is that giving is directly related to the concept of love. This is what a very wise rabbi once said. He said like this. He said, "We don't give to whom we love those to whom we give." Because when we give, giving creates a relationship. When you give to someone, you invest in someone. You invest part of yourself in that someone. You create a connection with that someone. So in fact, giving to someone, sometimes obviously giving is a product of love. But sometimes actually love, or enhancing love, or nurturing love in a relationship, whether it's parents and children or a marriage, whatever the case is, giving actually breeds love. Giving is healthy for love. It doesn't diminish love. It's not, "I'm giving away, so I love less." On the contrary, when you give properly, you invest. And therefore, when you invest, you love more, and therefore, love actually comes from giving. So that's on the one hand, that's the concept of giving in a very sort of brief synopsis, and there's so much in Jewish literature about the concept of giving. On the other hand, when we talk about taking or receiving, so on one level, we know that taking is often frowned upon. And there's much in Jewish literature about not being a taker, or not being dependent on others. You know, there are many, many stories of great righteous people who lived, who chose to live a life of poverty rather than taking from others, rather than being dependent on others, right? There's an interesting phrase and paragraph in the Birkat HaMazon, when we bench after we've eaten bread. Well, we thank God for sustenance, we thank God for the food we've eaten, but in a broader sense, we're thanking God for providing for us. But that thanking God for providing for us includes a prayer. And that prayer in benching, in Birkat HaMazon, also says, "V'na al tatzricheinu," please do not make us dependent on matnat basar vadam, on the gifts of others, or the loans of others, or the giving of others, because There's a virtue, there's a greatness in being self-sufficient and being independent, in investing, in putting in work, like God told Adam when he kicked him out of Gan Eden, that from then on, you'd have to work hard to earn bread, but that's considered important. That's what man has to do. That's what the human being is required to do. Yes, we have this concept of tzedakah and the concept of helping when people are in genuine need, but at the same time, we have this tremendous virtue of not taking, of not being a taker, so to speak, and being independent, on the one hand. However, it's not that simple. So, in other words, in summary, therefore, when we talk about, on a very simple level, when we talk about the concept of giving, the imagery is always something very positive. Often when we talk about the concept of taking, that's often a very negative imagery, and as a result of that, there are many people who don't want to take and never want to take on any level. And actually, it's not so simple, and it's not so good either. And let's try and explore that. Let me just explore this idea by sharing with you the following insight. There's a section in the Torah called Nezikin, which means laws of damages and responsibility. It's one of the sections of Torah called Mishpatim. Lots and lots of details about being responsible if you or your property or your animal causes damage to someone else or someone else's property, there's a responsibility to pay, compensation. Very, very detailed laws starting from the Torah, discussed very broadly in Talmud. In fact, in the Talmud, it's one of the most complicated and in-depth and analytical sort of passages of the Talmud, which really is very good for critical thinking. And in fact, in yeshiva, where people learn the Talmud many hours a day, that's the sections that are often chosen because it's very good for developing analysis skills. One of the laws is a famous law called Bor Birshut HaRabim. It's if someone digs a pit, a hole, in the street, right? It's an interesting angle of the law because, just to give you the halachic level of it, because normally the laws of damages are based around the concept that if I or something that belongs to me damages you or something that belongs to you, I'm responsible. So the Torah wants to clarify and make it very, very clear that if you dig a hole in the street and then claim that the street belongs to the council, not to you, you can't absolve yourself from responsibility, right? So that's one of the, that's the famous concept of Bor Birshut HaRabim. Because you created a hazard, even though technically it doesn't belong to you, don't think you can come with a claim that you did something damaged. It actually wasn't you that damaged. It wasn't something that belonged to you. Because you put it there and you built it and you created that hazard, it's your responsibility. Okay. So when the Torah describes this, it's called a bor, a pit. But the Talmud with Oral Torah and the Rambam and others explain that it doesn't have to be a pit. Any hazard is your responsibility. And they talk about that just as if you dig a pit or a hole in the street and someone gets damaged, it's your responsibility and it's considered part of your damages. The same thing is if you build a mound, in this, if you build something high in the street at a certain height, at a certain level where it's dangerous, and that's why I've called it the pit and the mound. So if you build something in the street, or you leave something in a street which has a certain height and could potentially be dangerous, or something or someone could trip over it and hurt themselves, or the animals could hurt themselves, or whatever the case is, you're equally as responsible. Okay, that's the law. Now, I've shared this concept with you many times, that any law that's in the Torah operates on many levels. So you've got the legalistic translation of the law, but then every law, besides being legalistic, also have deep mystical or philosophical meanings and lessons as well. So the commentaries explain this particular law is not just about damages. It's about a negative personality as well. And they talk about the pit and the mound being a symbol of receiving and giving. And both receiving and giving can be done in two ways. Both giving and receiving can be done in a positive way. And both giving and receiving, including giving, which is the mound, can be dangerous. It can be a hazard towards others or dangerous to ourselves. In other words, they see this law of the pit and the mound as a lesson for our personality. That when we examine the parts of our life where we give or we receive, where we give away or we take from others, we need to understand that actually both are important and both can be bad. So there's good giving and bad giving. There's good taking and bad taking. So the imagery that we have always to associate giving with good and taking with bad is wrong. Because it often is that way, but it's essentially wrong, and we need to understand the role of both giving and receiving. If it's in a negative way, so it's similar to this law where it's considered dangerous. Dangerous to our own personal human development, dangerous to our relationships, dangerous to others, and so on and so forth. If it's done well, if we reflect that we understand the importance and the important role of giving and receiving, then we understand its benefits, we understand how it should be done, and we understand the importance of both giving and receiving in its proper context. What's the idea? The idea essentially is this. It's true that everything in the world is based and founded on the concept of chesed. It's true that everything, the foundation of everything is kindness, to give away to others. But it's actually not kindness itself that's the concept. Meaning it's not giving versus taking that's the concept here. Rather it's this, it's selflessness versus selfishness. That's the idea. The reason why giving is so often and truly, legitimately, highlighted and emphasized as such an important thing is because giving is normally seen as a selfless thing. Taking often is seen as a selfish thing. But the underlying difference is not about giving or taking. It's about selflessness versus selfishness. Meaning it's about being able to put my ego to a side and connect with others, connect with a higher purpose, connect with meaning, connect with depth, go beyond myself, or it's about being trapped in who I am. Selflessness versus selfishness. And in selflessness and selfishness, you have giving and taking. So let's have a look. For example, let's have a look at, obviously, good giving. We know what good giving is. We've talked about this before. Caring for a child is good giving. Giving away charity is a good giving. Helping others is a good giving. Any form of help, any form of giving, normally is a good thing. But there's a lot of bad giving too. For example, when people give only to impress. Now, I say the word only, because giving at the end of the day is always a good thing. And we've always got a little bit of ego behind us, and that's fine. But the question is, when that's the only driving force with helping others, or we only help others when it's so obvious to many people, but we don't help them, as the Rambam puts it when he talks about charity, in private. That could be bad giving. When we talk about giving sometimes to manipulate, giving is often a form of control, very often in relationships. That's why sometimes it's not picked up unless you understand what to pick up. Often people enter in relationships, we end up as a disaster because they see or view the relationship at the beginning as an incredibly loving, giving relationship. Not picking up on that the giving and the loving and the helping and everything is actually a manipulation and a foundation to control. That's terrible giving. We have giving from weakness. Now again, that's not a terrible giving, but it's not always a good giving. When people give because they can't say no. And obviously, and often it turns out to be a bad giving, for example, when we ignore those that are close to us. Because someone else asked us to do things and we just don't know how to say no. So we say yes, and we give and we help. And everyone out there thinks we're great people, but in the meantime, our kids are suffering. Or our spouses are suffering, or our family is suffering. And we're not able to find that balance. Why? Because we're giving, 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 but it's a giving from an insecurity. It's giving from a weakness. And giving from a weakness, often we say it's better to give from a weakness than not to give at all. True, but not when it's the expense of other people. Then it becomes a negative giving. Many people give just for glory and honor. There's so many forms of giving which are not necessarily such great giving. Because it's not about giving and taking, it's about selfishness versus selflessness. So when the giving is driven by selfishness, often it results in a giving that's not good. So let's leave that there for a few moments and let's spend some time talking about the opposite, the concept of taking and receiving. So taking also, receiving or taking from others, often we associate that with selfishness, and often it is. People who are very egocentric, people who are self-driven, people who are just into themselves and focus only on themselves, often end up being real takers. But it doesn't have to be that way. Because taking or receiving is often an expression of selflessness. Because just as sometimes when there's good giving, we find good giving difficult, equally, and we've talked about this a bit before, equally so, we often find good taking very difficult. And let's just explore this a little bit. So first of all, the reason why taking is so important is because if giving is so important, it's a very simple equation. You can't have giving without taking. When that famous story, and I've told you this before, I think when the heretic asked one of the great sages of the Talmud, why did God create people not equal? If God is omnipotent and omnipresent and He's so all-powerful and He has everything and He's the sole provider for the universe, why didn't He just give everyone what they need? And the essential answer was, because God wanted a world of chesed. He wanted a world of mashpia and makabel, giving and receiving. Well, if that's true, and if the world was founded on chesed, if the world was founded on the concept of giving, giving cannot exist unless there's receiving. So we talked before about the virtue of being independent. That's true. But first of all, giving doesn't only mean physical things or material things. God created us all not equal, talent-wise, idea-wise, perception-wise, perspective-wise. We all have strengths other people don't have. We all have weaknesses other people don't have. And we need to take from each other. Because God wanted it that way. He wanted us to give to each other. He wanted us to help each other. So of course, when it comes to earning a living or when it comes to sustenance, there's a virtue in being independent and not taking. Because that kind of taking is very easy to translate into selfishness. But the concept of taking, a concept of allowing others to give to us or to help us where it's appropriate, is important. It's critical. Because there cannot be giving. People cannot help us. People cannot support us unless we're willing to, in an appropriate way, to take and to receive that help. Let's just talk about two thoughts with regard to that. Let's go back to the story of Abraham with the three angels. It's a very, very fascinating story. We know that Abraham was someone who was imbued with a concept of chesed. He loved to give. In fact, we are taught that we inherit the trait of giving from Abraham, being that he is the patriarch of the Jewish nation. We get that idea of giving from Abraham. So Abraham's hospitality was incredible and knew no bounds. He would invite and welcome and embrace anyone and everyone. He lived in a place where people would travel to and from, and therefore he would always go and look for guests and bring them in. His hospitality was absolutely incredible. So we know the famous story that God tested Abraham when he was 99 and asked him to go through the circumcision, which he did. So as a 99-year-old sitting there and recuperating from not insignificant surgery. So what does God do? He feels bad for Abraham. So he makes the day really hot so no one should pass by. And Abraham has a problem with that. He loves to give. So he's standing, say, sitting at the door of the tent, and he's looking somewhere, maybe, please, a guest, so he can give, so he can welcome, so he can share. So what does God do? He sends him three angels. But the story obviously is this. The three angels came to Abraham, and at the beginning, initially, Abraham did not know they were angels because they were disguised as human beings. So Abraham runs to them and he says, please don't go away. Please come in. Normally we'd say, please have a cup of coffee. He didn't say that. He said, please, I'll give you a full meal. Butter, cheese, the whole thing, and then, but it's followed by main course. Main course would be unbelievable. The best you can say, right? Now the truth is, the angels weren't only there so he could have guests. The angels happened to be there for a different reason. God had sent angels down to this earth for a mission. One was supposed to tell Abraham the news that Sarah would bear a child. The second was going to help assist with the healing of Abraham. The third was going to go on to Sodom and Gomorrah and destroy the cities. That was an evil city, and so on and so forth. Secondly, they already didn't need food. Because one of the defining characteristics of angels is they don't eat. So the normal thing for the angels to do would be say, it's okay, no thank you, it's very kind of you. We just have a piece of thing that we need to tell you and let's get on with it. But they didn't do that. The angels played along the game. Now there's a whole thing in the commentaries whether they really ate or didn't really ate. It was a physical body, it looked like a physical body, it's not relevant to this discussion. What is relevant to the discussion is that they complied. They said, yes, sure, we'll come in. We've got other stuff to do. We're on the way to Sodom and Gomorrah, but we'll come in. We'll have a drink. We'll eat your meat, your cheese, whatever you give us. Why? It was something they didn't really need. They weren't actually in need. They did it to facilitate his kindness. Now, obviously, as a general rule, that's not always such a good thing to do, just to play a game. So other people should give you things even though you don't need them at all. But they did it because this was a foundational meeting, as we said before. And the angels were teaching us an important lesson. It's not good to say quick, to quickly always say no. Because sometimes receiving is as hard as giving. And sometimes people have a personality that they hate to impose on other people. And that's a very virtuous thing. It's a fantastic thing. As a general rule, that's a great mindset. It's a good default position. It's a good default position not to want to always be needy. To be a needy person isn't a good thing. It's not good for relationships. It's not good socially. It's not good altogether. So yes, on the one hand, we are taught to have less needs. And part of having less needs is to develop a personality. We don't have so many needs, so we don't always need other people. And we don't always demand things from other people. We don't have always expectations. Our expectations are less. Our needs are less. It's much better. It's much better for relationships. Much better socially. It's much better as a human being. On the other hand, the flip side of that is, or the weakness of that is, often is, that we're so obsessed. See, nothing in an extreme is good. And sometimes people are so obsessed with not imposing that you can come into someone to say hello and they'll say, do you want a drink of water? And they'll say, no, please don't. I don't want to bother you. I just wanted to talk to you about something. Right? But and you happen to be thirsty. And actually you wouldn't mind the cup of water. But people, no, please, it's okay, it's fine. Please don't get up. The person wants to. And if you have this experience in Israel, it's unbelievable. I don't know. This is in Israel. The hospitality is unbelievable. There, if you come in to a house and yeah, please take everything. And I've got friends over there. They give you a guilt trip. They put it spiritually. What? You're not going to make a bracha in my house? Please, it would be my honor. Make a bracha, and they mean it, right? So sometimes tendency, no, please, no. Right? There can't be giving without receiving. A person wants to give, it's a good thing for them to give. It's good for human, it's good for the world for there to be giving. When you come into someone's house and you happen to be thirsty anyways, it's not imposing on other people to say yes to, yes, thank you. You're not asking the person to make you a 7-course meal. You're just saying, yeah, if you've got a drink in the fridge, no problem. If you've got cold water, I'll take that too. Why? It's a good thing, it's a mitzvah. You know, there's an amazing thing I once saw, a halachic thing, which was mind-boggling to me. If you ever went to synagogue on Yontif, you'll know, actually in Israel it's done every day, but in the diaspora it's only done on Yontif, except for Sephardi communities do it every day here as well. There's a mitzvah in the Torah for Kohanim, men who are Kohanim, to bless the people. Right? Yivarech HaShem Mishbarech, and if you've been in Shur, Shalom Yom Kippur, we do it. Sukkot, Pesach, Shavuot, we just did it. So the Kohanim get up in front of the shul, in front of the ark, and they bless the people. It's a very beautiful moment. You're not supposed to look at them. It's a tradition. Fathers take the little children under a talis sometimes. It's a very beautiful moment. Now, it's a commandment. It's a mitzvah. It's one of the 613 mitzvot in the Torah for a Kohen. Kohanim apparently were given special powers to bless that other people don't have. And therefore, it's a special mitzvah that Kohanim have to bless the congregation. So I once saw in one of the great halachic commentaries an unbelievable innovative thought. And he says it with regard to a number of things, but particularly with regard to this mitzvah. He says, when the Kohen gets up in shul and blesses the congregation, so obviously that Kohen is fulfilling a mitzvah. It's one of the 630 mitzvot, and the Kohen is fulfilling the mitzvah by giving the blessing. However, he continues, this is called the Hafla'ah. The Hafla'ah says, he says that the people in shul receiving the blessing are also fulfilling a mitzvah. Halachically, they're fulfilling a mitzvah. Why? Because any mitzvah, he says, that involve two people, and mitzvah you cannot do with someone else. If I have a mitzvah but it involves you, and I can't do the mitzvah without you, even though it's not your mitzvah, you get the mitzvah because you're facilitating my mitzvah. If the Kohen has an obligation to bless the congregation and he comes to shul and there's no one there, there's no one to bless, he can't do his mitzvah. Coming to shul and becoming blessed, staying in shul when the blessing is there and becoming blessed by the Kohen is a fulfillment of a mitzvah. Which mitzvah is it? No mitzvah like that in the Torah is very simple. Because if the Kohen has a mitzvah to bless, you have a mitzvah to be blessed. Because he cannot bless without someone to bless. There's no giving without receiving. We find this even with God himself. One of the great stories in the Chumash, one of the sad stories in the Chumash, I should say, is the golden calf. When the Jews served an idol, they served the golden calf. Now the context of the golden calf was very sad because often the question is asked, and there's so many different explanations for this, but just using one that is relevant. If you get the sequence of events, the Jewish people stood at Mount Sinai. We just had Shavuot, where we celebrated Mount Sinai. The Jewish people stood at Mount Sinai, and they received the Torah. This was the greatest divine revelation ever. They had just come out of Egypt, witnessed the 10 plagues, witnessed the splitting of the Red Sea, miracle after miracle, divine revelation after divine revelation. They stood at Har Sinai, they became God's people, God chose them as a nation. It was a marriage we are talked about, unbelievable moment. There was nothing like it. It was just the Jews were elevated to an incredible madrega, incredible level. Moses goes on the mountain the next morning to receive the laws of the Oral Torah, comes back 40 days later, and the Jews failed, stooped to such a level to do something which is considered a cardinal sin and serve an idol, the golden calf. How could that happen? How could that happen is understood from what happens after that. God calls Moses and he says, I want to give the Jews an atonement. I want them to do something that will atone and help them repent for the sin of the golden calf. What is it? Truma. You've got to gather them all and tell them they've got to build a sanctuary for me to live in. And the way that sanctuary is going to work, the Mishkan, later on became the Beit HaMikdash, the temple in Jerusalem. The way they have to do it is they have to give Truma. Every person has to contribute. Tell them they should bring whatever they can afford. Gold, silver, copper, the materials, the wool, the blue wool, the red wool, whatever the case is. They all have to bring the materials. They have to contribute and they have to build for me a sanctuary. Vasuli Mikdash, build for me a home and I will dwell among them. So some of the commentaries explain a beautiful idea. God saw that the problem with the golden calf was this. That the relationship between the Jewish people and God when they came out of Egypt was a one-way relationship. God was doing all the giving. Why? Because in a relationship between people, everyone has needs. In a relationship between God and us, God doesn't have needs. God is all perfect. That's part of our fundamentals of our belief. So therefore, God was doing all the giving. God says that's not good enough. It's not going to work that. A relationship has to be based on giving and receiving. The Jews have to contribute to this relationship. They have to give. If they will give, it'll be theirs. When you give, when you invest in a relationship, we said before, when you invest in something, it becomes yours. The Jews stood at Har Sinai. That was an amazing moment. They were elevated to such an incredible level, but they were passive. And they needed to be active. They needed to invest. They needed to be actively involved in the relationship. So God says like this, I want them to start giving, but I understand if they give, I'm going to have to receive. And this is a very difficult philosophical idea that the mystics explain. For God to receive is a problem because God doesn't need. But God chooses to need, so to speak. He chooses that what we do should have an effect. He chooses to care about what we put in. And in that story, he chose to receive. He chose to care. He chose to want to take from us. Why? Why did he choose to care? because he knew that without him receiving, we can't give. So in order to facilitate our giving, to fix up the mistake that had led to the sin of the golden calf, he chose to take so we could give, so we could solidify the relationship. And that's on one level why receiving sometimes is so important. Sometimes we have to think, hold on a second, I know we don't want to oppose other people, I know that we're obsessed with not taking, but sometimes we need to. Because first of all, just for the simple reason that there cannot be any giving without receiving. That's point one. Point two is this. Oh, sorry, we did this right. This was the Mishkan, okay. The second thing is like this. We talked about that the issue here is not so much giving and receiving, it's selflessness versus selfishness. There are many forms of receiving that are in fact the greatest expression of selflessness. Because receiving doesn't only mean to take things from other people. Receiving often means to learn from other people. To let other people help us in things that they know how to do better than us. To listen to advice from people who are more experienced than us. And there, being stubbornly independent in the name of not wanting to take is the greatest form of selfishness and egocentricity. It's there that receiving is in fact the symbol of selflessness, not giving. I mean, it could be both. The person who's giving could also be selfless. He or she is giving from their time, their experience, their sharing, and so on. But sometimes out of the two, the giver and the taker in such situations, the greatest selflessness is the receiver. It is not easy to admit that you don't know everything, at least for some people. It's not easy to absorb ideas from other people when it wasn't your own. It's not easy to take criticism. Criticism is a form of receiving, if it's taken properly. No one likes to be criticized. It's not a pleasant experience. Yet it's one of the most fundamental and critical parts of human growth. We know that in Pirkei Avot, in Ethics of the Fathers, we are told, who is the wisest person? Ezeu Chacham, who is the wisest person? Halomed Mikol Adam, he who is able to learn from every human being. From everything. Higher than me, lower than me, more knowledgeable, less knowledgeable than me. That takes a lot of humility. It takes a lot of working on the ego. So there's a whole avenue. There's a whole avenue of receiving that is in fact, specifically the receiving is in fact the expression of selflessness and not selfishness. It is all about going beyond ourselves. Giving means we go beyond ourselves, we grow. And often the greatest growth is actually to say, I'm humble enough to receive from someone else. I'm humble enough to know that this I can't do alone. This I have to get from someone else. I'm humble enough to know that I want to engage in a project, I want to do something, there's someone else that knows more than I do. And I'm humble enough to say, tell me what to do, or advise me. I'm humble enough to say, maybe this is something I shouldn't be doing, let me leave it to someone who can do it better than me. That takes an amazing amount of humility. It's the receiving end, but it's greater humility than the giving is. And it's true emotionally too. So often, we need to know that God put us here on this earth to be together and to give and take to and from each other. And often what that means is there are certain things that we just cannot do alone. And sometimes we need to reach out for help from others. It's difficult. Sometimes we have to swallow our pride, whatever the case is. But sometimes when there's no other choice, we have to get other people to help us. And that's sometimes an expression of humility in its own right. And that's where receiving becomes so important. So there needs to be both. And I want to just end off with a general concept. And we'll develop it more over the next few weeks. But the giving and receiving, as we said, is both important. And one of the things that we need to learn to do as part of giving and receiving is to help others give and help others receive. I'm just going to share with you two things. The first thing I'm going to share with you comes from a new book, a fairly new book. We spoke about her speech a while ago, but Sheryl Sandberg, okay, that famous speech on resilience, but she's written a book, I don't know if you know this, called Option B. She's the big CEO on Facebook and whatever. That's a good book. I've started to read it. She has a chapter there called Kicking the Elephant Out of the Room. And she says the following. Often receiving is so critical because, especially when people go through challenging times. When people go through challenging times, the way God designed us is that we need to share. We need to be on the receiving end. We need to talk to other people. We need to get support from other people. Now there's a very, very interesting verse in Proverbs said by King Solomon. And he said the following. Da'aga, she doesn't say this by the way, this is my edition. Funny enough. Da'aga belev, although she's Jewish actually. Da'aga belev ish yashchena, which means worry in the heart of a man, remove it. What does that mean? We know that one of the things is worry is not a healthy thing to have anxiety, to have worry. So King Solomon says you've got to move it. One of the things we know about the Hebrew language, that's so beautiful about the Hebrew language particularly, is that often one word can mean two opposite things. And when one word means different things, we have a principle that they're always connected. So the commentaries say in this pasuk, this verse like this, they say, how do you remove worry? How do you get rid of anxiety? By looking at the other translation of the word yaschena or yashchena. And the word yashchena has this, if you look at it carefully, has the word sicha in it, to talk. Right? So it says, worry in the heart of man, remove it, which is the one translation. The other translation is yaschena, talk about it. Share it with someone else. But that's a very difficult thing to do. And sometimes, because it's a real humble thing to be able to do, to admit and to share your vulnerability with other people is a very difficult thing to do. And some people find it much more difficult than others. And yet it's critically important for everyone. Everyone goes through challenging times and everyone needs to learn that that's a time to receive. It's a time to reach out, it's time to be supported by others, and it's difficult. But one of the things we can do, and that's why I'm drawing on what she says in the book, is we can make it easier for people. Now in her circumstance, I'm not going to go through it in detail because it's late, but you know her story is that her husband died very suddenly, and she went through this amazingly challenging time, and she said she realized, but then she realized that she was doing it to others as well. She realized the isolation that followed, and it didn't only follow because of the tragedy. It followed because often when we know, we have close people even, that have gone through very, very difficult times, we meet them and we talk about the weather. And we talk about everything under the sun, rather than really asking them how they're doing. Why? People are well-meaning, because people don't know what to say, they're afraid of upsetting people, and often what that does, and that's what she calls it the huge elephant in the room. And she said she learnt and she realized in a situation that followed that she was doing it to other people as well. So she started this concept about getting rid of the elephant in the room. And about when you know, I mean, you have to be very careful because saying too much can be hurtful sometimes. Saying stupid things can be hurtful. But there is that concept of being an opener. In other words, facilitating a discussion. Making it easier for people to receive. Perhaps we'll develop it a bit more over the next couple of weeks. But that's a concept that I wanted to say that in giving and receiving are both important. But they can be both hard. And we have to sometimes help people receive. We have to make it easier. We have to make opening statements or say things that opens the door for people to reach out and want to be supported and want to receive in the appropriate way. And the truth is, the exact same thing is about giving. We have to make it easier for people to give. And I think I've told you the story before, but it's a beautiful story. I'll just end with a story. It's a story of the first Chabad Rebbe called the Alter Rebbe, that he was once in a town and he was collecting for a very, very important cause. The cause was someone who was incarcerated by the evil regime of the Russian government at the time. And it was really important. It was dangerous for the person. It was important to get him out. There was a ransom that needed to be paid and so on. So he got a list from the president of the community of who he should go to. And then he gave him some names who he can go and solicit funds from. And then Rabbi Shnei Zalman, the Alter Rebbe, said to this guy, there's one very wealthy Jew in this town, but I don't see his name on the list. He started to laugh. He says, He doesn't give anything. He's a big miser. You'll never get a cent out of him. He says, okay, don't worry. I'm going to do it. He goes and he sits down with him and he says the following. And the guy received him. He opens the door. He says, oh, come in, Rabbi. Such an honor to have you. He says, now how can I help you? So the Alter Rebbe says, I've come for this really, really important cause. And it describes the plight of this Jew that he's collecting for. And the guy nods and he says, oh, that's really, really terrible. I'll help you. And he goes to the safe and he takes out an old, rusty, small coin. And he gives it to the Alter Rebbe. And the Alter Rebbe says, oh, thank you so much for your support. It's really kind of you. Hashem should bless you. And he gets up and he's walking out. And as he's walking out, the guy calls him back and he says, you know what, Rebbe? I'll give you another coin. And he gives him another coin. And the same thing happens. It happened again and again and again. And this time he gave him a silver coin and a gold coin. Anyway, he ended up giving him the whole amount that he needed. He comes back and this guy, the president of the community, he says, no, how did you go? He was laughing at him. He said, no, he was very generous. He gave him the whole thing. He said, you can't believe it. So Alter Rebbe says, let me explain it to you. It works like this. For some people, giving is very hard. This guy had a blockage, if you can use that imagery, on his heart. A real blockage. And what used to happen is everyone would come to him for help. He was a respectful person. He'd take out the same rusty coin and give it to the person. And the person, understandably, would become so enraged, they'd throw it back at his face. Alter Rebbe said, I didn't do that. I took it from him. I helped him. And I punctured the blockage just that little bit. When I punctured the blockage just a little bit, he opened up a bit more. He gave more. I kept on doing the same thing. Sometimes we need to understand giving and receiving on whatever level it is, doesn't have to be money necessarily, but on any level, giving and receiving is a difficult thing for some people. For some people, giving is harder, for some people, receiving is harder. We can help people give and receive. It's part of our duty of giving, is to help people give and receive. And part of that, when it comes to giving, is to celebrate small successes, is to encourage people in taking small steps, not to enlarge the blockage, but to dissolve the blockage. So it's both receiving and giving that we have to help each other as part of the creation of the world, the collective creation of the world, be able to make progress in and to do. And please God, over the next couple of weeks, we'll try and develop some of the aspects of giving and receiving. Have a wonderful week.